Good morning, America. This is Brian Fox, the Foxworthy Podcast. I'm here with Taylor Gaines of GainesvilleScene.com. And today we're going to talk about a couple of returning TV shows, one being the Comedy Central half-hour series, Nathan For You, starring Nathan Fielder. And we're going to talk about FX's Fargo, which just started its second season last week. We're recording this Tuesday, so there have been two episodes that have aired. So, Taylor, how are you doing?
I'm hanging in there. I got a new column going up today.
A new column going up today. Do you want to tell the people what it's about, or do you want to save it and just direct them to the site?
I'll tell them what it's about.
Okay.
If they're listening, they deserve to know. It's about a show I don't remember if we discussed it on here or not, actually. I guess that's good that we've done enough episodes that I don't even remember what we've talked about. Show on Sundance called Rectify.
Yeah.
Have we talked about that on here?
We haven't, because I haven't gotten a chance to watch it. But you and many other people have sung its praises. So
yes, and I wrote similar... similar things.
We'll post a link to that. That'll be up on Hidden in Plain View column, Taylor's column on GainesvilleScene.com. And I guess we can dive right in here and talk about... You've been watching a ton of TV stuff, right?
Yeah.
Way more than me.
Particularly
I've only
Sundays.
Keeping up with like four or five shows, but yeah, Sundays are definitely... So we tried to talk about some stuff we hadn't touched on, so... you told me to check out Nathan For You, which I've heard about. People have talked about it. People have told me that it's really funny. My brother actually said he really likes it. And I have seen, like, maybe one episode and, like, another half episode of somewhere in, like, this first or second season. But Nathan For You just started its third season last week on Comedy Central. Basically, what's the conceit of this show? It's basically, like, I've heard people compare it to, like, reality... like, improvement shows, kind of stuff like Bar Rescue or, like, Kitchen Nightmares. But it's, like, basically the idea is that Nathan Fielder comes into a business and helps them improve it.
With a slightly off-kilter idea for a...
Right, but I guess in... different from, like, a show like Review... This show is apparently entirely real. Like, the people on it are real. And they're not in on the joke. So it's almost like a kind of prank. Kind of?
I guess you could call it a prank show.
But I mean, the people that are on
it... But it's definitely real because... I remember when the show first kind of seeped into the public consciousness was when he did an episode called Dumb Starbucks. I don't know if that's what you heard about.
Uh-huh.
But basically, he went to, like, a home, what would you call it? Small business, like, coffee shop in some town.
And tried to help them, like, and compete with Starbucks?
His way to help them compete with Starbucks was to use parody law and...
I see.
Effectively turn their store into a dumb Starbucks. And
so it was like...
They just put the word dumb in front of everything and copied everything else about Starbucks.
And they actually got in trouble, like, in real life?
They did get in trouble because he ended up doing something that was illegal. Hmm. I don't remember what it was, but...
So as far as we're led to believe that the show is real, quote-unquote, like, the people that he's supposedly helping have real businesses and
stuff like
that.
I'd put it this way. I think the show is real, but the Nathan Fielder you see on the show is probably not real.
Right.
Because he has this weird... How would you even describe his persona on this show?
It's funny because it seems like he... The joke is almost that he explains the plan to save these businesses with such a straight face. But it's like the most ridiculous, outlandish thing you've ever heard. But when he's describing it and explaining it in detail, he seems really sincere. At least in the way that... The episode that I watched.
He's very dry,
mm-hmm.
I guess.
Like, yeah.
And it's almost, I don't know if ironic is the right word. It's definitely contradictory. Like, There's some episodes where there's one episode, I think it's the very first one, where he's doing a job interview and he's the conceit of the skit or whatever you call it is that he wants to see if he can land a job on confidence alone. So he has a little kid mic'd in talking to his ear, telling him what to answer with the interview questions. And he's basically, you know, just answering with random things a little kid would say to a job interview. And then in his narration over the show, it'll be, like, it'll show him and he'll be like, so did I land the job? And she'll be like, no. And he'll be like, but maybe. And she's like, no. And he's like, but maybe. And she's like, maybe. And then his narration comes in. He's like, I nailed it. I did great in my job interview. And, like, it's kind of like, that's kind of like his style. Like, even the opening credits, which I think they changed this year. It used to just be him. He'd be like, I graduated from one of Canada's top business schools with really good grades. And then it would show a report card with, like, 2 B's and 3 C's on it. So that's just kind of his, like, his general comedic vibe, I guess.
So you like this show?
I like the show a good amount. Some of the episodes that I think are really great. That was a really confusing way to say that. I really like this show. It has some episodes that I really love. There's one from the first season where he sets up a rebate system for a gas station that's not getting enough business by effectively offering gas for like $1.50, but you can only get gas for $1.50 if you return the rebate. And the rebate box is at the top of a mountain, like 30 miles away from the gas station, and it's like a scavenger hunt that the people have to go on to find the rebate box. And you have to take it in person, and a lot of people actually do it. And it's interesting because it turns into like this half hour about people becoming friends and, like, you know, learning what's important in life. And it's like this really weird, poignant thing about a gas station rebate box, which I think his best episodes of the show kind of become something else entirely, if that makes sense. I don't know. You've only seen the one. Let's talk a little bit about the one that aired this
well, last week. Well, let me say this. I think I've seen, other than the one I watched yesterday, I've seen one other episode, which was pretty funny. I think it was an episode from, like, the middle of the second season. But, like, so far I'm not completely convinced that the show is for me. Huh, Nathan, for you. It's not necessarily for me. The first episode of the new season was fine. I mean, it was entertaining, but I wasn't, like, clamoring for more.
The thing I've always felt about this show, in a general sense, is, like, especially compared to Review, just because I saw them both at a similar time, because they were both Comedy Central shows. I feel like I've always thought of Review as being, like, a better show, but not really many people seem to watch Review or, like, to enjoy Review, I guess. It's, like, a very small group of people that like Review. But whenever I've shown this show to other people, it seems like it's, like, more accessible than Review, maybe just because it's just straight up, like, funny and not much else. I don't know.
Yeah.
But this episode was definitely, like, interesting. I mean, basically the premise of the first episode was he was trying to help a small electronics business by manipulating Best Buy's price match policy.
Right, his idea, he comes to this small business owner, this guy has a TV shop down the street from a Best Buy, and he says, let's price match. They do price matches there, so if you set your prices super low, we can get people to go buy all the TVs at Best Buy for that price. So they set a bunch of really high-quality, high-end Samsung HD TVs at $1 and put an ad out. And then people come and they want to buy the $1 TV. But they set up this whole elaborate thing, you have to go through, they set up this wall with this tiny door, and you have to crawl through the tiny door, and then behind that is another door that you have to go through, and in the room behind that door is an alligator in front of just this stack of TVs that are marked $1. And then they go to Best Buy, and they try to get Best Buy to price match it, and basically, I mean, this is where you kind of get the sense that it really is real, like, they go to Best Buy, and basically all of the employees' faces are just completely blurred out, and they're basically rejecting Nathan's request to price match TVs at $1. They're like, no one in town, no one, you're not going to find any electronics store that's going to price match that at $1. And it's just, yeah, it's interesting. It's funny, kind of, but like, I wasn't, like, over the moon about it. I enjoyed it fine.
Here, let me say
but
this.
I don't have a lot of experience with this show, so I'm just basing it on basically two episodes that I've seen over the past couple years.
Yeah. I mean, let me say this. I've seen all the episodes of the show. If you want to get a sense of whether you'd like the show, season 1, episode 4 is the gas station rebate episode I just mentioned. Season 2, episode 5 is Dumb Starbucks. And then season 2, episode 2, there is an idea he enacts where he helps a souvenir shop in Hollywood get better business by filming a fake movie in their store, and then finds out that you can't really do that to get people's money, so he ends up having to make it into a real movie. Those three episodes are probably the best example of what the show is if you want to get an idea of whether you would enjoy it or not. I believe it's all on Comedy Central right now on their app or on their website. Okay. Because they're trying to promote their new season.
Yeah, I did see that there was a bunch of episodes from the second season on there, and I thought about going back and watching a few.
But I do want to talk a little bit about what you think of this kind of show, where someone kind of, I don't know, like one of those shows where it seems like once people know about it, it wouldn't really work, because you...
Right.
You have to go to people who think you're actually trying to help them, and then, like...
Yeah. I would assume I'm not the only one who has maybe made this comparison, but I feel like in some ways the idea of it and why I used the term prank show is it feels very much like what Sacha Baron Cohen's whole shtick is about, like, kind of, like, capturing people, like, in the moment, like, unwittingly, you know... They're totally not aware of, like, what he's actually doing and getting reactions. And, like, part of the humor comes from, like, people taking something ridiculous seriously because they think it's real and not just made for television or entertainment.
The weird thing I feel like with this is sometimes his ideas I hear and I think, like, that's just might be crazy enough to work.
Right.
And that's why I never am really sure what his actual intentions are. Like, obviously he's making a comedy show, but... I don't know that he would be against his ideas actually working.
Right.
Because there's some episodes where he goes to painstaking lengths to make sure that there are actually legal things to do. And
yeah.
That
is interesting because he'll show you, like, he'll, like, highlight, like, a contract or, like, he'll, he put up the Best Buy price match, like, their whole, like, policy for that. He, like, found that, highlighted it, read all the fine print of it, stuff. So, yeah, I mean, it's an interesting idea for a show. I think it has potential to be funny. I mean, I've only seen the two episodes, and there were amusing moments, but I'm...
What was the other episode that you saw?
It was like... I don't even remember now. It was probably definitely something from season... Maybe it was like season one... Was there something where he did like something with a group of kids? And it was like it like is really uncomfortable.
Is it the one where he has to get out of the handcuffs before?
Yes, that one.
Oh yeah, that was probably the worst episode of the show actually, because he did a live episode where if he didn't escape this contraption in time, his underwear would have been pulled down and he would have been exposed to a bunch of small children and he would have become a like. Sex offender, basically.
Yeah, that might have been the one I saw. So I basically saw an okay one and a terrible one. So I do not have a good
sampling
of what this show it really is.
Yeah, I definitely think that was the worst one because it was like a live episode and it was like sort of a funny idea, but it was mostly kind of just uncomfortable. Yeah, there are definitely better ones than that.
Speaking of live, this is totally off topic and we can cut this out if it goes on a tangent. Have you checked out this Undateable show at all?
No, have you?
No, but I keep forgetting. No, I keep
seeing...
Well,
then seeing, I guess we'll have to cut this
out. I keep seeing the ads. Well, no, I mean, maybe it's something we should talk about in the future, because yeah. I just think it's completely fascinating that they have an entire season of live episodes.
Yeah, that is really interesting. I've been meaning to check out one of them, but yeah. I've never seen that show before, so I just...
Right, and I think they're on their, like, third season, but I guess, is that show supposed to be good? Do you know? Like, in general?
I don't really know. No one really talks about it on the internet.
It must be sort of okay if it... If enough people watch it that it has gotten renewed twice.
It's also NBC, so yeah. I don't really know what the hell they're doing with comedies usually. They
yeah.
They kind of just do whatever they want.
Yeah. Anyway, you said live episodes, so that was where my mind went. But yeah, so Nathan, for you, Comedy Central, what...
Thursdays. It's replacing Review, effectively.
Okay. Thursdays at 10?
I believe so.
You can yell at us on the internet if we're wrong, but, Thursdays at 10, Nathan for You, Comedy Central, yeah, I mean, I enjoy it, it's fine, I think that there are other shows on Comedy Central that I like a lot more, Broad City's really good, obviously we've talked about Review on the show, and Taylor has a column about it, that show's terrific.
I'm potentially interested to see what you would think if you saw more of it, because I do think part of his... act, so to speak, is kind of an acquired taste. Mm-hmm. Like, he's very off-putting.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's definitely a show that I find really funny a lot of times. And it's always got a business idea that's just crazy enough to be worth just telling people, like, this was something funny that I saw. Anyway.
All right.
Let's move on.
Let's shift gears.
Let's talk about something I know that we're both really excited about.
So, we're in the early episodes of the new season of Fargo. Fargo is a show that was developed for television by Noah Hawley, based on the Coen Brothers movie from the mid to late 90s. I don't remember exactly what year it was, but...
1996.
Basically, yeah, that's what I thought. 96. So it's based on the 1996 Coen Brothers film, also entitled Fargo. But like many shows that have hit FX, well, I shouldn't say many. I'm really referring to American Horror Story as the other FX show that has this anthology format. True Detective is another one. And there's a whole trend now. American Horror Story, Fargo. True Detective. I feel like there's one that I'm forgetting. But anyway, they're following this anthology format, which is becoming more increasingly popular. I think people are really into this idea of completing a season with characters, an arc, finishing that with no cliffhanger, like wrapping up the story, and then the next season they do, the next year, has maybe some of the same characters or none of the same characters, but the story is completely new. You don't necessarily have to watch each season in order. Each season is basically its own story that finishes. It has a beginning, middle, end, finishes, satisfies you. You can watch one year, then you don't have to watch another year, or vice versa.
Yeah, I want to say briefly, I think the reason that this anthology thing is becoming more prevalent is because there are just so many TV shows now that people don't have time to watch everything, and they don't want to get invested in something if they don't know where it's going.
Right.
Where if a show's only supposed to be 10 episodes, then they can feel pretty comfortable in the fact that the creators have an ending in mind, and they'll get some kind of satisfying ending in a relatively short period of time. So it's like good bang for your buck, I guess.
Yeah, and this definitely... it's each season is essentially its own sort of mini-series, and it sort of confused me the first few years that American Horror Story kept being nominated in, like, the mini-series category or whatever. Now I guess they're calling it limited series for some shows, it just depends, or event series, limited series, mini-series, they're all basically the same idea with just slightly different names. But yeah, American Horror Story had a lot of nominations for the first few seasons. Well, they've all their seasons, but they're always in that category. And for the first few years, it really confused me because I didn't understand that because each season was basically a different story with different characters and a different arc, that they were being considered a miniseries every year. So this anthology show is sort of a, it's a newer thing within the past, you know, 4 to 5 years that shows have taken on. And I guess Fargo and True Detective kind of aired, the first seasons both aired kind of at a similar time.
And yeah, I think they both came out the comparisons first half kind of started. Last year.
So anyway, I didn't get to check out all of the first season of Fargo. I've only seen a few episodes of that. But I went ahead and started watching the second season knowing that I didn't need to know necessarily everything that happened in season one because it's a prequel. It's set in 1979 and it only features a few characters that are actually in season one. But you watched this show basically last summer, right? When it first aired, the first season?
Yeah, and I hadn't seen the movie before then either, so I also watched the movie.
Mm-hmm. I've watched the movie. I've seen the movie before, but I rewatched it recently in preparation for the show coming back, just to remind myself some of what it is.
It's worth trying to describe, even if it's hard to describe. But the movie and the show have a very distinct sensibility about them.
Yes.
If you've seen the movie, you probably have a good idea, but I'll try to explain it, I guess. It's sort of like, it takes place in Minnesota. I believe the show and the movie take place in Minnesota, even though Fargo's in North Dakota, right?
I believe it is, yes. Which anyway, I just realized. Yeah.
And it's got this very, like, kind Midwestern vibe with something much darker going on underneath.
Yeah, the characters are all very, like, sort of fine and likable, and they have that sort of goofy Minnesota accent.
Like, the premise of the movie is that this, like, this inept, like, middle-aged guy with his family basically commits a horrible crime and then doesn't know how to handle it and has to try to cover it up, and it gets tied into something, like, much bigger and...
Mm.
It's just a very, like, it's a very interesting movie. And the first season of the show starts off cribbing from the movie a little more than...
Definitely visually and tonally, I feel like it, because that's one of the episodes of the first season I did see, and it mirrors a lot of things in terms of style and tone from the movie.
Even the story of the initial first few episodes is very similar. The main character, this time played by Martin Freeman, does something criminal and then has to, like, try to cover it up, basically. But the interesting thing about this show was the farther it got into its first season, the farther away it got from being anything like the movie.
Mm-hmm. And it also seemed to get more... There was a lot more critical praise kind of heaped on it as the season went on, I think.
Yeah, because at
maybe
first...
Maybe that's a direct correlation.
At first, people weren't really sure, I think, whether or not the show was good because it was just kind of a carbon copy of the movie. But then it became pretty clear that the show was its very own thing. And it had this similar, like, Coen Brothers vibe of, like, being a very dark comedy. But it just... had so many quirky characters
and great actors,
yeah,
too.
And like wild
great ensemble,
wild visual images of its own that it really became its own awesome little thing. And come this second season, which you can watch if you haven't seen the first season, because like we said, it starts totally
fresh.
There are like tenuous connections to the first season, like. Mm-hmm. The cryptic opening to season two, where an actor and a producer or something are like waiting for Ronald Reagan to show up on set to film the Sioux Falls Massacre movie, which I believe is a movie that doesn't even exist, as far as I know. But there's like a cryptic opening. I don't want to get too into it because it's very weird.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have seen the first season, the opening makes a little more sense. But I think even if you haven't, like, thematically, you'll kind of understand what the opening's about by the end of the first episode. But regardless, the show in its second season is very much its own thing, and it's got its own story.
Yeah, it's, but it's like also I said, got this very distinct... It's set in a different time period, so it has a different kind of visual style, too, with
right.
the period details.
And it's got a very distinct sense of place, and just... It's one of those shows where I just like to be there, you know? Like, Justified was a great example of that, where I just... Even though... Shoot, why am I blanking on the name right now? What's the city in Justified? Harlan County.
Harlan County.
I guess it's not a city. But...
basically, Harlan County and Lexington, Kentucky, and all those.
But I felt like I knew Harlan County and was, like, hanging out in Harlan County
right.
by the end of that show. And that's kind of what Fargo's like, where even when, like, dark-ish things are happening, I'm just kind of like, I love being in this world. Like, this is a fun place to be.
Yeah, so it's all about just kind of being in the world of the show, even if there isn't even, like, a lot going on. Like, there was plenty of episodes of Justified, for example, where not a whole lot happened, but, like, you're still just, like, happy to be visiting that place and, like, you know, with those characters and kind of with that witty dialogue and stuff. And I feel like that's a pretty decent comparison to what's going on here. I mean, visually, this show... The second season of Fargo was really striking. I mean, the first episode had just some really, like, just cool visual. I mean, obviously, like, the snow is already, like, just a really interesting,
there's an extended set piece in a Waffle Hut.
Yeah.
That I won't spoil, but that is really striking. And,
yeah.
Like, just a really great, it's just a really great piece of television, honestly. Like, I just loved every minute of it. Everything about it was interesting. The characters, however...
And once again, like, they got a whole different group of actors, but they're all pretty much across
yeah,
the
like,
board amazing.
I mean, and the cast is fascinating this year. Like, this is a cast that includes, like,
Ted Danson.
Patrick Wilson, a Culkin brother, Nick Offerman at certain points.
Brad Garrett. Shows up.
From Everybody Loves Raymond.
The mother from How I Met Your Mother is Patrick Wilson's wife.
Frickin' Todd from Breaking Bad. And what's his name on Friday Night Lights? Landry. Jesse Plemons is his
real name. Jesse Plemons, yeah.
Kirsten Dunst is on this show.
And she's great. She's great on this show.
There are some great people on the show. And it's a very eclectic cast, too. It's very interesting. It's not like last season, although, well, it is in a way. Like, because Billy Bob Thornton and Martin Freeman are, like, huge names.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of the draw for a lot of people, I think, originally to the show. But this season, like, Patrick Wilson is, like, you would know him if you saw him. But, like...
Right. He's like, in a lot of movies and stuff.
And like, Ted Danson, I guess, is probably a pretty big name.
Yeah.
But...
Which, like, is funny, because I love that he got to do this, and then he also just, like... left the original CSI, which got canceled, and now he's on CSI Cyber. And, like, CSI Cyber Season 2 and Fargo Season 2 are, like, airing at the same time. So, like, one is, like, super lowbrow, and one is, like, maybe a little highbrow, like, just, like, something prestigious and something, like, super basic and generic.
Yeah. I get the feeling...
That's pretty interesting.
If this is anything like Season 1, then there's gonna be, like, a random actor who becomes the, like, main crux of the show, because... The first season, Alison Tolman was pretty much the MVP and, like, the main character. She's, like, if there is a connection to the first season, by the way, she's, like, 9 years old on this second
season.
Yeah,
because it's basically her father is the main character.
Right.
And he was only a supporting character in the first season.
And obviously
so basically
much older.
Goes back and tells the story of a case that he worked, basically, like, when he was still a cop.
But Alison Tolman, if you listen to our podcast and watch the same shows we talk about, briefly Forrest's girlfriend and coma nurse on Review from the early episodes of Season 2. Anyway. So I really like Season 2, and it's really interesting and quirky, and it's got so much interesting stuff going on that I almost forget that... there was a UFO sighting in the in the first episode of Fargo?
Maybe, though. Like, it's nothing is ever really explained. Like, he just sees something in the sky that clearly resembles a UFO.
I don't want to get too into it, but it's that kind of show where everything's grounded in this really strong sense of place and reality, but there's also something else going on, and you're not really sure what it is.
And it also, like, switches from, like, some pretty good, like, humorous moments to, like, some really dark, like, and violent moments.
Yeah, if that's, like, one thing they got from the Coen brothers that they do really well on this show, it's that dark comedy that they can pull off.
Yeah, I mean, I'm impressed with it. I'm really excited. I'm excited to go back and watch season one. I'm excited to continue watching this season. I think this is definitely... I haven't caught up with The Nick, but I know that that's another really prestigious show. The Leftovers is also on. That so, in terms of network shows, I think we had a moment a couple weeks ago where we were not really that enthusiastic about network shows, but it seems like there's a lot of interesting stuff coming on for this fall season on, you know, some of the cable networks, and some of the more prestigious stuff is back.
Yeah, so. With Fargo and The Nick starting last week, it was kind of a... And Leftovers starting like 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. Cable TV is kind of kicking back into high gear, I guess.
Yeah.
And I don't think I've watched any network dramas in this season.
I don't think I have either.
But anyway, we spend more time talking about the network stuff than we probably do watching it.
True.
So I don't want to harp on it too much, but yeah, I believe the first two episodes of Fargo are on FX now.
Yes.
If you have a cable subscription.
Also, I'm pretty sure still the first episode is available on iTunes, Google Play, a lot of digital retailers for free. The first one.
Of season two.
Of season two. Waiting for Dutch is the episode title. I don't think they've taken it down yet. They're trying to get people into it. So if you use one of those kind of streaming services, you can probably find it for free without commercials, and you can see, you know, what it's all about. So, yeah, I think that covers it.
Let's do a quick update on something. We talked a lot about Grantland last week.
Uh-huh.
And yesterday it was announced that another writer was leaving. And there's been reports of more people leaving. Do we think this is really the end? I know we talked about this last week.
Sounds like it is.
It seems like they really don't need it to exist anymore, outside of Andy Greenwald.
But it doesn't sound like they're bringing... All these people are leaving, but it doesn't sound like people are actually coming on board to, like, you know, replace anyone or add new voices. Or it just seems like everyone's jumping ship, and it looks like the ship is just going to sink.
Like, I just saw, like, Andy Greenwald posted a column yesterday called "Why Anthony Bourdain's Parts Unknown is as Good as Any Prestige TV." And I was just kind of, like, question mark? I didn't know what is that?
Maybe he's just pumping out material, because it's... I don't know.
I don't know,
I'm
worried about him, because he's one of my favorite writers. And given the way the site has kind of imploded on itself, he's like the only prominent pop culture writer they have left.
Right.
And given that Grantland is owned by ESPN, they could just bring over all their sports writers to their main site, and then I don't know what would happen to Andy Greenwald. I'm sure he would find a place to write.
For sure.
But it definitely isn't promising.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if by, you know, within the next few weeks, the site just completely goes away. It dissolves as fast as the dissolve.
Anyway, end on a sad note. Or we could end with a brief discussion of the Star Wars trailer that came out last night.
Oh my god.
Have you watched it more than 12 times yet?
I've watched it a few times. But here, let me say this, because I think this is something interesting to talk about. We can just touch on this for a couple minutes. I genuinely, and this is not going to happen, but I genuinely wish that every major blockbuster movie would take a cue from the genius marketing behind this movie and release teases of movies that are not 5-minute trailers that basically reveal every plot point, every action set piece, every money shot in the movie before we even sit down. I have, you know, things that I guess are going to happen in this movie, maybe, but I could be completely wrong. And I just like that even though we've had 3 trailers, in fact, the one they showed yesterday was like almost 2.5 minutes, which is a good length for a trailer, but it still doesn't tell us anything about this movie. Like, it's just a lot of flashes of images that don't really make sense.
There was only one shot that troubled me as far as giving away something.
Do I want to say what it is? I mean, go for it, but if you spoil something, I'm going to be mad.
It was doesn't matter. Daisy Ridley.
Crying.
Who, by the way, I've already decided I'm going to fall in love with her when this movie
comes
out.
Dude, I follow her on Instagram, and she is adorable. She is adorable. I love her.
But she was crying, and I was just like, I feel like that could be, like, that middle point of the movie where somebody important, like, dies, and, like,
yeah.
And there's been so much speculation about what Luke Skywalker's role is in this movie that I'm just kind of, like, coming to conclusions that I don't really want to come to.
Right.
What's
fascinating to me is people are like, people online, I mean, this is just something that I saw. A lot of people were like, this trailer was really disappointing. Like, this doesn't look like Star Wars. Like, I don't know what everyone's so pumped about. And I think people are just really disappointed that, like, they haven't seen more of the movie in the trailers. Like, I really think people just want everything, and they're not getting it, and they're just frustrated.
Yeah, I don't know if they're planning to release more trailers.
My understanding is this is it. And I would really hope that this is it.
I would like to not watch any more trailers. I want to go into this movie as unknowing as possible.
There's
really
barely any dialogue in any of the trailers. Like, they're just random lines that don't really tell you much of anything, that say very vague things. We know Andy Serkis is in the movie. Haven't seen what he looks like or what he's up to. Max von Sydow is in this movie. Don't know what he's doing.
Hell, Oscar Isaac is barely in the trailer.
Yeah, Oscar Isaac, like, you see his face, but he doesn't speak or anything. Like, you don't really know, like, how big or small his part is. Like we said, Luke Skywalker, not in the trailers at all.
I don't know who the bad guy is. I'm sure people on the internet know already, but
freaking Lupita Nyong'o is in this movie.
Nobody knows. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Lupita Nyong'o is in this movie. We don't know what she's up to. There's so much that we haven't seen, and I really wish that every major movie would just, I feel like this is what it used to be. Like, I honestly feel like when I was growing up in the 90s, like, trailers were more like this. They were more teasery. They, like, gave you an idea of what you might see, but they didn't just give you the whole movie in the trailer.
Yeah, I feel like this is kind of a trend that started back when Inception came out, because I remember that trailer being very cryptic.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, that was at a time when trailers were really becoming very explanatory, almost,
yeah,
of what the movie was. And then the trend kind of came back in the other direction a little bit. I mean, a lot of trailers are still bad about this, but more trailers give away less now, which is great. And especially with a huge movie like this, I really would prefer to go in just being surprised by everything.
Right.
Like, my goal is, I'm probably not even going to watch the trailer that came out last night again, because I don't really want to. I just want to go see it blind, basically.
Yeah, and I mean, for this, and I was texting with a friend of mine this morning. It's because it's Star Wars, and because they know that people will sell, like, they'll sell tickets no matter how much they show or how little they show.
Tickets went on sale when the trailer went up last night.
Yeah, and the internet was broken. Yeah. Like, I could not get on Fandango. It was literally broken for, like, pretty much the whole night. I did eventually get through, but Fandango was a mess. Like, they just were not prepared. In fact, it was funny because when you went to their site at one point, like, it said, uh-oh, we're performing maintenance, and it had a picture of, like, Han and Chewie from The Empire Strikes Back with, like, tools in their hand, like, working on something. It was really funny. They were, like, in on their own failing.
Yeah, there was just no way for the websites to prepare for what was going to happen.
Star Wars is going to be awesome.
Well, let me say this. I think
we have any doubts at this
point. My main takeaway from the trailer last night was, even if this movie isn't a quote-unquote good movie, first of all, I don't know that many of the Star Wars movies are actually good movies, but I don't want to get
taken. That's a conversation for another time.
But even if this isn't good, it's going to be awesome. Like, the visual look and aesthetic of it is amazing, just based off the trailer. Like, it looks great. I'm really excited for it. Just I would if somebody told me I could go watch it on mute,
right?
The first time I would be fine with that. I think.
Yeah, you know, nostalgia is a powerful thing, and that's a conversation we can have at some other point. But
maybe that's maybe how we can get popular by being the Star Wars averse people. Even though I'm really jazzed for this movie.
I'm so jazzed. I mean, this was my childhood. I grew up on these movies.
I love Episode 3. That was my jam.
I'm excited. Yeah, and like even I was a kid when the prequels came out, and like everybody likes to dump all over them now because, you know, CG has come really far, and, you know, there was some stilted acting in those movies, but they're still, like, when I was, like, 15, like, 14 and 15, I thought they were pretty awesome. So, anyway, well, I think we'll leave it there. We'll wrap it up. Maybe next week we'll touch on some new stuff. I think we're both kind of watching The Grinder, so maybe we'll do
an
extended bit on that, and if we think that that's, like, maybe one of the better network shows of the fall season.
Whatever else happens, I guess.
Whatever, yeah, maybe there'll be some pop culture phenomenon other than Star Wars that happens this week that we can tackle. But thank you very much for listening. We'll put a link up to Taylor's column, which will go up today. And you guys have a great one. We'll see you next week.